evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, January 29, 2018. A top UN advisor accuses neighboring countries of fueling the conflict in South Sudan.
The responsibility to prevent atrocities is regional and international. Weapons and ammunition are flowing into South Sudan through Kenya and Uganda. Countries of the region need to start taking their own responsibilities towards South Sudan.
And the Troika accuses all armed parties in South Sudan's conflict of recruiting child soldiers.
CT SAM has verified the existence of child soldiers in western Barl Ghazal, Jonglei, and central Equatoria, and reported ongoing recruitment of child soldiers in western Equatoria, Unity, and Upper Nile states. They've seen recruitment by all sides, including the SPLA-IO led by Taban Dengai.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Today is the final day of a two-day summit in Addis Ababa where leaders from the African countries and the region are meeting to discuss and make decisions on reform of the African Union, integration, and especially addressing corruption and how to stop it. Hailing the partnership between Africa and the United Nations as solid and grounded on sound principles of human rights and good governance, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres told leaders gathering at the summit that with Africa in the lead, quote, we can and will do more to bolster successful cooperation throughout the country. One major accomplishment at the summit was the launching of a single African air transport market, or SATAM, at the opening of the ceremony. Rwandan President Paul Kagame, who assumed as this year's AU chairperson, announced the launch of the initiative. Kagame said the launch of the air transport market will gain almost 300,000 direct jobs and millions of indirect jobs from the 55 member countries of the African Union, which have signed relevant documents to construct the market. The UN Secretary General's Special Advisor for the Prevention of Genocide, Adama Dieng, is intensifying the UN's call for an end to the violence in South Sudan. Dieng told South Sudan in Focus that Uganda and Kenya are fueling the conflict in South Sudan, adding that there must be a concerted effort to target the accomplices and intermediaries of those who supply arms to South Sudan.
Well, I think this criticism is unfounded. As a matter of fact, the AU Commissioner for Peace and Security was saying 2018 should be the year we earnestly consider all options at our disposal that could deter further violence and restore peace, dignity, and security in South Sudan. My view is that the situation in South Sudan can't be treated as business as usual, given the magnitude of killings, displacement, and humanitarian crisis. It is about time that punitive measures were applied toward those who impede path to peace. And I do believe that ensuring accountability for the crimes committed in South Sudan since 2013 cannot rely on the court alone.
There is a talk that anything to do with sanctions on South Sudan will not work at the UN Security Council, and that the region should take the initiative of sanctioning those who are blocking the road to peace. But some of the members in the IGAD countries have vested interest in South Sudan. They have shown their colors. For instance, Uganda sided with the government during the 2013 fighting in Juba. Some opposition members are saying Kenya is also siding with the government, deporting their members from Kenya. So how would you rally the region behind a cause when they have vested interest?
Well, let me first remind each and everyone that although the responsibility to protect population in South Sudan, the primary responsibility lies with the South Sudan government, the responsibility to prevent atrocities is regional and international. It is true that large quantities of weapons and ammunition are flowing into South Sudan through Kenya and Uganda. countries of the region need to start taking their own responsibilities towards South Sudanese civilians. I mean, welcoming refugees who are victims of a conflict they are de facto facilitating is not good enough. And similarly, international partners have to start targeting the accomplices, intermediaries, and suppliers of the South Sudanese parties whenever they come. I mean, preventing new atrocities will only be successful if we have a concerted regional and international effort to leave no other option to the South Sudanese leadership to stop fighting and start negotiating.
Your points are in place that these countries neighboring South Sudan that have ports or have facilities should stop transporting arms to South Sudan. But at the same time, these countries have their national interests, which overrides the regional interests. How would you convince them to forget about their national interests and look at the regional interests?
Well, IGAD will be opening in a few days the second phase of the forum destined to revitalize the peace process. I think now is the time to close any possibilities of alternative. The continuation of fighting should not be left as a possible option. And we need IGAD, the AU Peace and Security, and the UN Security Council to come together and take concerted action now.
Mr. Adama, the government in Juba would always say that they are not the obstacle to peace. It is the rebels who are blocking the road to peace. What do you hear from Juba? You have a huge presence on the ground. The mission, the UN mission in South Sudan is on the ground. What do you hear from South Sudan?
Let's be clear. The government and the opposition have taken no significant step to suspend or discipline individuals responsible for atrocities. South Sudan is suffering from total impunity of armed men who have embraced sexual violence as a systematic weapon of war against civilian communities perceived to support their enemy. South Sudanese women and girls have become the overwhelming victims of a conflict which is undertaken much more against civilian population than by military fighting one another. And I think this shows a despicable abandonment of responsibility from the country's leadership and a deep moral crisis.
That's Adama Dieng, UN Secretary General, Special Advisor for the Prevention of Genocide. He was speaking to me from Podgorica, Montenegro, earlier today. Tomorrow, in part two of this interview, Dieng talks about Plan B of the international community. The United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway say they are concerned about the continued recruitment of child soldiers by parties on both sides of the conflict in South Sudan. In a statement released today, the three countries, commonly referred as Troika, say forces loyal to government, SPLA-IO faction led by first Vice President Taban Dengai, and forces loyal to rebel leader Riek Machar are all guilty of keeping and recruiting child soldiers. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio has more from Juba.
The Troika statement reiterates what it calls the great concern expressed by the IGAD Council of Ministers at the continued employment of child soldiers by the parties to the conflict in South Sudan. The US, Great Britain, and Norway say they are appalled that South Sudanese children are bearing the brunt of the crisis. In December 2017, the UN Children Agency UNICEF estimated that nearly 20,000 children are recruited by the various armed groups in the country. UNICEF spokesman in South Sudan, Tim Irwin, says the number of children being recruited to fight has actually risen since 2016.
We have an estimated 19,000 children who remain in the ranks of armed forces and armed groups. We have seen an upsurge in the recruitment of children since the fighting escalated last July and July 2016. So the numbers of children being recruited is increasing. We have not had any real significant releases of any child soldiers since 2016.
The UNICEF report said an entire generation of children is at stake as they face death, injury, hunger, disease, recruitment, forced displacement, and absence of education. Mark Weinberg, public affairs officer at the American Embassy in Juba, says Reports by the Ceasefire and Transitional Security Arrangements Monitoring Mechanism, or CITSAM, confirm that all armed groups to the conflict in South Sudan have continued to recruit and keep child soldiers.
CTSAM has verified the existence of child soldiers in Western Barl Ghazal, Jonglei, and Central Equatoria, and reported ongoing recruitment of child soldiers in Western Equatoria, Unity, and Upper Nile states. They've seen recruitment by all sides, including the SPLA-IO led by Taban Dengai and the SPLA-IO led by Riak Machar.
Agel Machar, a spokesperson of the SPLM-IO faction led by South Sudan's first vice president Taban Dengai, denies his group is involved in active recruitment of child soldiers.
We in the SPLM-IO do not condone in any way, shape or form child recruitment or use of children in warfare. We are emerging out of a civil war, and we have to make sure that we clean our forces in the cantonment sites so that they meet the standards of international law. So we are working very hard in this to make sure that if there are child soldiers, they are demobilized immediately and they are taken care of and they are handed over to UNICEF or other institution that can assist them.
A spokesperson for the SPLA-IO faction led by Riak Machar was not immediately available for comment on the Troika statement. But in the past, the faction has repeatedly denied accusations of recruiting child soldiers. The Troika statement says, the deployment of the child soldiers with the Matiang and Yor in the Yei area is the responsibility of the SPLA government forces. SPLA spokesperson Brigadier General Lul Roy Kwang denies the army is recruiting children into its ranks.
We have not been involved in the recruitment of child soldiers anywhere in the country. Secondly, is that we do not have a separate army called Matiang and Yor that is made up mostly of child soldiers anywhere in the country. The recruitment, which was done in 2011, was purely in response to a national call that was made after the country was attacked from a glitch by the North.
Weinberg says all the parties identified in today's statement are in clear violation of international and national law and the agreements pertaining to the current conflict.
Within 30 days from the 24th December 2017 signing of the cessation of hostilities, the parties should have demobilized any child recruited or enlisted by their group to UNICEF. CTSAM has still not received any verification from any party or from UNICEF that this process was completed by 23 January 2018.
UNICEF estimates that around 10,000 child soldiers were released in 2013. But since then, more children have been recruited by government and rebel forces.
The Troika strongly encourages all the parties to cooperate with UNICEF to release all children employed in the war without delay. It's the responsibility of all parties to ensure that the children of South Sudan are given a hope for a better future.
The recruitment and use of child soldiers is prohibited by the August 2015 Agreement on the Resolution of the Conflict in the Republic of South Sudan, international humanitarian law, and reiterated in the December 21, 2017 Agreement on Cessation of Hostilities, Protection of Civilians, and Humanitarian Access, signed by all stakeholders in Addis Ababa. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio, in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, IDPs in Juba say they are being abandoned. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
are women treated fairly in your country? Explain.
I think, to my observation, women in other way around are treated fairly, but not all that they are treated fairly. Because when we consider in the form of maybe distributing resources in form of maybe giving them job, I think they are not all that treated fairly.
In some communities, women are treated badly. Women are not recognized.
Okay, it is like women are not really, they have never get chance for going to school, especially when they were still girl. That one is also a weakness, and it is like when you are a woman, you are not capable to do anything, simply because you have never get the same chance with men.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. Jonglei state officials are condemning threats against aid workers operating in the area. State Governor Philip Aguer met with aid workers in Bor today to assure them that state authorities will guarantee their security. Unidentified people have written a series of letters to World Food Programme and other UN agencies threatening aid workers. Dengai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Governor Aguirre formed a 7-member committee to track down and apprehend the authors of the letters. South Sudan in Focus obtained a copy of the letters and signed letter dated January 20th in which the aid workers were threatened. It accuses WFP staff of supporting inter-clan conflict and recruiting employees on an ethnic basis. The letter orders WFP to evacuate its staff from Bor or risk facing unspecified consequences. Governor Agur says despite the threatening letters, aid workers should remain calm and assure them of their safety.
We call this meeting to discuss in general the humanitarian operation in Jonglei State and in Bor Town in particular. And the meeting have condemned the letter, and the government have been asked to take measures against that letter.
Aguirre says the threatening letters have already prompted some humanitarian agencies, including Catholic Relief Services, to leave the area.
A committee is formed to write to CRS and to condemn the letter and call upon the CRS to remain in Bor, in Jonglei State, and continue with good services to the civil population.
Aguirre says state authorities are investigating who is behind the letters, threatening letter.
It has to be traced, and it's a criminality, it's a criminal act, and we condemn it as a criminal act, and it is good to trace the origin of the letter so that measures are taken on that letter.
Aguirre says aid workers in Jonglei will be protected.
I believe the role of the protection is our responsibility.
Last week, authorities in Minkaman of Eastern Lakes State detained several armed youth for harassing International Medical Corps, or IMC, staff. The youth were accused of looting the IMC compound and detaining four humanitarian aid workers for ending their contracts. The aid workers detained by the youth were later released by Minkaman authorities. An IMC staff member who did not want to be identified because he is not authorized to speak to the media says the project in the area had come to an end, and that is why aid workers were relieved of their position with IMC. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
Internally displaced persons living in Juba complain they are being ignored by aid agencies, accusing aid groups of being biased in the way they respond to the needs of displaced people in certain parts of the country. Women and children sheltering in a camp known as Juba 2 say they have not been given food for months now. Manyang David Mayar visited the camp and has this story for VOA from Juba.
50-year-old Rachel Agau sits in front of her blue tent, gazing thoughtfully at a nearby road. Her lips are chapped. Her face is wrinkled beyond her years. She is splitting sucked fruit from the acacia tree to bring out the seed in order to prepare it for food. Agau is one of more than 2,000 IDPs in this camp who were forced to leave their homes in Yei when conflict spread to the area in 2016. Agau says since she arrived in Juba and settled in Juba 2 camp, aid officials have provided very little food and water. Speaking in Dinka, she says she tries to earn a little money by selling firewood.
We just returned from the bush from collecting firewood. We take the firewood to the market for sale in the baking sun. Sometimes people buy the firewood and at times nobody buys. If you are lucky, someone buys your firewood and you use the money to buy flour. If you are unlucky, nobody buys your firewood and you sleep hungry.
Agao says she fled to Juba with nothing, not even cooking utensils or an extra set of clothes. She says she could not afford to cross the border to the refugee camps in Uganda, so she came to Juba hoping to get help from the government and humanitarian organizations. But that has not been the case. CAMP coordinator Michael Adierkwal says he believes aid agencies are aware of the humanitarian needs of IDPs living in Juba 2 CAMP, so he cannot understand why they don't provide more assistance.
When we got here, we did not know where to be and where are we going to actually start. And as time went by, we also went to the humanitarian bodies through the Ministry of Humanitarian and Management. So they were able to accommodate us and they understand us and they came to us actually. They make assessment through UNOCHA. After the assessment, we were unable to receive any food, from either the government or the UN itself.
Adier says IDPs staying at the other camps around Juba in Mangaten, Kor William, and other areas are receiving food from aid agencies.
We are asking NGOs that are supporting to balance maybe the interest. It should not be on one side and you leave the other one out. So this is my appeal on behalf of my people here. Our needs are the same like of those people there.
Paul Den, deputy chairperson of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, says humanitarian organizations are governed by donor interests.
Major donors' policies are sometimes discriminative. And in the context of South Sudan, we have clearly seen it in so many operations that some agencies are directed by their donors to specific operation, to specific area, irrespective of the needs.
Dell insists his agency provides supplementary food to all South Sudanese, even those who are not necessarily displaced but are going hungry. But he says the World Food Program only gives food to certain IDPs.
The camp at the southern part of the city, which is Juba 2, is now being considered as part of the IDP settlement area. We are now engaging our partners, the WFP and the rest, to see the possibilities of reintegrating our communities back to their community, because we will not allow our people to stay in camps forever.
In the past, the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission was accused of distributing the rice provided by the Chinese government to government officials, leaving the vulnerable and the most hungry to starve. Dell argues everybody in South Sudan is hungry, including government officials.
If we go with the data that is presented by the international community and the UN agencies, they are saying over 6 million people are food insecure in South Sudan. In other way around, the international community is like saying the whole South Sudan, including you and myself, is food insecure. If we go with that data, then everybody in South Sudan is eligible to be supported with that food.
Dell says 2,000 tons of rice have arrived in South Sudan from China this month, and his commission is working out how to distribute the rice to the most needy across the country. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar, reporting from Juba.
Zambian hip-hop artist Fumba Chuma has never shied away from provocative lyrics, but his most recent hit has forced him to flee into exile amid threats on his life from those who see the song as criticism of President Edgar Lungu. VOA's Anita Paul spoke with the exile musician and has this report.
Fumba Chuma, better known by his stage name Pilato, spoke with VOA from an undisclosed location. He went into hiding after releasing the catchy dance track Kozwe Mumpoto, or Rat in the Pot, in the Bemba language, in December.
I started getting threats, both as voice notes and video clips, of warnings telling me what they were going to do to me. They told me they were going to beat me. Some were saying I deserved to die. I was going to be killed. Some were saying even if I was going to the courts, I was going to be snatched away from the courts and be dealt with.
Pilato took these threats seriously and left Zambia earlier this month. Rights groups have documented tightening restrictions under President Edgar Lungu, saying there has been growing political intolerance and politically motivated arrests. The 33-year-old Pilato is no stranger to controversy and spares no one with his sharp words. In 2011, he released a song in which he called some members of the Zambian parliament mental patients. That was followed in 2013 with a single in which he called then-President Michael Sata the father of lies. In 2015, Pilato says he was arrested for defaming the president and disturbing the peace for a song in which he called Lungu a drunk. Pilato says the case was thrown out of court. In his newest song, Pilato raps about leaders who behave like rats, stealing food and other things they do not need. The lyrics drew immediate condemnation from the ruling Patriotic Front's Youth League, which released a statement giving him 48 hours to withdraw the track. VOA calls to Zambian officials went unanswered, but the nation's High Commissioner to South Africa has vigorously denied that any threats came from the government. Rights group Amnesty International has called on Zambia's government to stop cracking down on dissent. Amnesty researcher Lloyd Kuvea says the group believes important freedoms are at risk.
We are really concerned about the issue of freedom of expression and assembly and association. So the moment a government starts to crack down on one individual, it's not going to stop. And we've seen that sort of thing happening in countries like Zimbabwe, for instance.
Pilato says whatever happens, he will not stop singing.
I keep making these songs because they're necessary. I believe somebody has to stand, somebody has to speak out, somebody has to challenge the wrongs if we are to move and create a better country for ourselves. Somebody has to stand up and say, this is wrong, things shouldn't go in this direction.
He says his name, Pilato, is an acronym for People in Lyrical Arena Taking Over. Anita Pell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Yeah, we're singing for peace.
It doesn't matter which color.
That's our show for this Monday, and we now leave you with the song Anader Salam, which means I need peace. Bye. I am Peace Ambassadors.
There's no sense of hating one another. Based on our trust, Jera and Taki, they are beside the waiter. Matasa Kilamo, Mosada, Mabasango, Gabila Daki.
Madrupidin Adosito within you know this time Madrupin Yabetawa and Rekolunye Yoko Borikolumaiwa. Let's learn to forgive and live in peace and harmony. Doesn't matter where you came from, what tribe or race, politicians, politicking, trying to cause separation. And just sick and tired of this wars that you're creating. Innocent lives lost every day and night, children left helpless. What kind of life are we leading? Yeah, let's preach peace.
Ale medo janya troku ale bwe ana mader masakil maita na dero sana ale medo janya troku ale bwe ana mader masakil maita na dero sana.
It's me and you can bring the peace we want. Me and you can make this country a better place. All we need is love, unity, togetherness.
Is anybody out there? Can you put your heart on the wall and breathe peace without fear? Let's all sing.
We have been listening to I Am Peace Ambassadors with the song Anader Salam, which means I need peace. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. We want to hear what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. You can also check us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.